everybody. This is Brian Mahoney with OTT Executive Podcast. We're thrilled to do our second iteration of the podcast. We're joined today by Isabel Rafferty. Isabel, welcome.
Thank you, Brian. Very happy to be here.
So as you know, we started this podcast series with a focus to learn from leaders in the industry, but also to learn a little bit about yourself. Maybe you could start with just a background on yourself, your career, and sort of what led you to where you are right now.
Yeah, happy to do so. I think you will notice my heavy accent. I'm originally from Mexico City. I moved to San Diego when I was young, but obviously not too young because I still have an accent. And I grew up in beautiful San Diego. And now I'm living in the East Coast in Connecticut. So trying to deal with a cold. I tell people that Latinas are not made to deal with cold.
I think we have. Why did you leave San Diego? It's like kind of just a paradise, right? From a weather
perspective. That's what people said. Like, people usually move from east to west. Like, why would you do that? But there's something magical about living next to New York City. Our headquarters are in New York. Mm-hmm. And it's really where things happen. Anything that is advertising, business, I love being in the city. I think it's just fantastic. Our headquarters are in New York. So for that reason, I moved to New York City. I'm a serial entrepreneur. So Canela has given me the opportunity to create a company from the bottom up. I started my career very early on with the big broadcasters in the Hispanic media space, the Univisions, Telemundos. Then I work in the largest chain of Hispanic newspapers here called Impremedia. But I always had a focus in digital media. I saw very early on the opportunity on how audiences were consuming digital media, in particular mobile advertisement. And that allowed me to join a company and be the second employee in growing the first mobile ad network for Hispanics. And for me, that was very rewarding seeing a company grow from the bottom up. And I got hooked to the startup life. And I'm like, I'm a builder. I want to build things. So after running that company very successfully, I decided to launch my own company. And that was called Mobius. It was a data-focused company and how we could identify multicultural audiences beyond language. And that grew very fast. I got acquired year in by a public traded company out of Spain. I remained as a CEO for the next 3 years. And I was very excited to see that company flourish and grow to become the number one Comscore rated company in the US for Hispanic audiences. And then I was given the opportunity to continue to run these companies for this group. But I knew there was a huge opportunity and that nobody was seeing, because I kept reading like the streaming wars. And that was when HBO had launched and everybody's talking about streaming wars, so much competition. And as a Latina, I realized, hold on a second, there is no streaming service for us. Hold on, can that be possible? I did a little research and I realized there was not a streaming service geared for 20% of the population in the US. And I'm like, I'm gonna launch a streaming service. And people thought I was a little crazy. Maybe I was, looking back. But I was there at the right time. And I guess the rest is history. Canela became the first streaming services for Hispanics in the US. Now we're also in Latin America, and it's been a very fun, fast, incredible ride.
Congratulations. That's pretty amazing and quite astounding, actually, that you were really the first streaming service targeted at this demographic. I mean, there's obviously established channels, Spanish-speaking channels and so on. Let's talk about that a little bit. How do you define your audience? Obviously, you can look culturally, you can look language, you can look geographically. How do you sort of target your audience and define who your viewers are?
That's a great question. So we know that 20% of the population in the US today is Hispanic. And that's self-identification through the census. You consider yourself Hispanic. And I think that's very important to understand that it's not a language only metric. You know, you're not Hispanic because you speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. It goes beyond that. So because there's a lot of growth in the US in particular from second generations. They're born here in the US. They speak perfect English. Maybe they don't even speak Spanish. But one of the things that sticks with Latino culture that is very different to other cultures assimilated in the United States, think about the Irish, Latinos keep a lot of their cultural background. They're very proud of, and there's a lot of things that make Latinos and culture. We're very passionate about family. Family is at the center, and which that could tend to be more multifamily households more than any other group. We're a specific foods, soccer, of course, so football, what we call football. So there's very, very specific things that ties us as Latinos. So my audience is anyone that sees themselves as Latinos. Many of them could be Spanish speaking, but then you have people that are born here that will be attracted to programming that speaks to that culture. So that's in the US, and in Latin America, we launched in Mexico and in Colombia so far. So that's pretty much the whole population there.
Okay, so you have a mix of culture, language, and geographic footprint. I was going to ask you about other countries. How do you, I mean, it's nuanced, right? So how do you do your programming? How do you figure out what content fits those different, and really this sort of sub-demographics within your audience too? How do you manage that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's not as simple. And I think that's a differentiation on Canela. So when we launched Canela, yes, there were other general market services in the AVOD space. There was Tubi, there was Pluto. And what we noticed is a lot of non-focused Hispanic providers, because they focus in reaching everybody. They have one bucket, they call Hispanic, and they're all the same. For us was diving even deeper to understand the subsegments of the Hispanic population, to create a stride of programming that was different and it will attract the biggest numbers of Latinos to our programming. One of them was to start to diversify the content. So we, as an ABOT, when we launched, we were very heavy library based. And when we're looking at libraries to acquire, we noticed that a lot of the content that had been aired in the past in the United States skew very heavy Mexican-American. I mean, from Mexico in particular. Why? Because Univision at that time had a very strong partnership with Televisa, one of the largest producers in Mexico. Telemundo tend to skew very heavy Mexican content as well. And because 60% of the Latino population in the US is Mexican. However, we saw a huge opportunity to diversify that, because I think audiences are becoming more global. And also there's a lot of growth from other subsegments of the Hispanic populations, for example, Venezuelans and Brazilians. So we brought libraries not only from Mexico. We did not ignore the Mexican segment. Of course, we brought incredible content from there, but we brought content from Argentina. It has never been aired in the US. A lot of content from Colombia, Ecuador, even from Spain. So we came to market with one of the largest libraries and of very diverse content, which spoke to a lot of subsegments that had never been tailored to before. And that was a very successful strategy, allowed us to grow very quickly. But as we continue to purchase libraries and growing that, we saw that there was a segment that we were not able to gear towards. And it was a very important to us, because there was not content made for them. And that was the Latino born here in the United States, which is our cultural Latino, but language is secondary, and there's things that make Latinos here a little bit different than when you're an immigrant and you just arrive here. So we thought, for that reason, even though we're AVODs and not everybody do original, push us to do original programming. And just this quarter, we produce over 580 hours of original programming that is geared to that segment. So we have studios, we produce in our studio 7 daily shows. We have a daily newscast with news that are relevant to a US Latino. We have an entertainment magazine show, which we highlight the biggest celebrities, Latinos, that are important for US Latinos. We have 3 music channels where we have celebrities talking about and up and coming celebrities in the music space. So going very deep in the genres of Latin content. And then we just, with the World Cup, we launched 2 sports daily shows that go very deep into football. So yeah, content has been exciting, and being able to gear to all the segments has been very important for us as an estriety.
That's awesome. By the way, World Cup, we're big fans. Two of my sons are big soccer players. So they've been getting at 5 o'clock in the morning. And can we miss school? I'm like, no, you can't miss school. But that's really exciting. So, you know, we talk a lot in this industry about tailoring content to your audience, and you know, that matchmaking can be very difficult. I'd love to better understand your EPG, your recommendation engine. Right? You know, if I'm sitting down, what's it look like? How do I scroll? And, you know, content from Argentina, from Spain, you know, telenovelas, like what does that experience look like? And how do you even, I don't know, how do you even put your arms around that challenge?
That's a great question. And I'm going to give you an exact example because it's very timely. We're launching December 15, our specific platform for kids. And when we're thinking about a kids platform, it's the first time there's going to be an OTT service all in Spanish for children. Age is very critical. So one of the things that I notice is that many times kids are going to these services and then they're bombarded with kids with very young programming for toddlers. And it's not really serving well those specific users. So we use a lot of artificial intelligence to get to know very well the audience. And we have to be very careful with how we utilize that data, especially when you're talking about kids, because there's a lot of regulations around data. Mm-hmm. But a lot is learning what they like to consume to be able to make a more strategic decisions on the content that is shown to them. In the case of kids, it's age, right? You want to make sure you're proposing the content that is relevant to that specific user, and then they're going to find attractive. So with our AI technology that we have embedded in every single video asset, it's not anymore based on metadata. So it's not what you see and if it's written like kids or the description, because that could be not the best way to customize experience for a user. So for example, you can say I'm a drama lover, for example, and there's so much types of drama out there. And if we just go so broad, I'm going to be serving you every type of drama movie out there. Mm-hmm. But when you're able to use this, our technology is based with sentiment and it reads a lot of cues. For example, one of them being the way people are speaking in the film or the tone, to see what emotions that specific music or the way people are telling us, what is the emotion that is making that user feel. And then also measures the colors in the film to see, are they dark? Does that film makes you feel happy? So mm-hmm. who are the celebrities on that film? And it allows to not go beyond the metadata to understand the sentiment that film is creating for that user, to understand what sentiment that user likes to get, to serve them content that maybe goes beyond drama that will make them feel that sentiment that he enjoys seeing when he watches a film. So mm-hmm. yeah, we're always experimenting with technology from ad load to sentiment to artificial intelligence. We have a team out of Silicon Valley. It's led by an incredible executive. Her name is Shampa. Shampa was the chief product officer of Pluto. So he helped run that
wow.
company. Yeah, and she joined us here because she wanted the flexibility to build and create, and we're builders. So we are experimenting with very interesting ways to serve better our user with mm-hmm. a lot of data. So there's going to be a lot of exciting announcements of what streaming 3.0 could be. And the most beautiful thing is with Latino audience at the center.
So you talked about some of the different techniques you use. I mean, there's AI, obviously, there's the human curation factor and so on. When you talk about children, let's explore that a little bit more. How reliable is profile management? You know, someone logs in and it says I'm the kid versus the mom or the dad or what have you. Do you use that, or are you just assuming, you know, it's like herding cats, right? How do you, you know, rely on people being reliable, quite frankly, to log in at the right profile?
To be transparent, I don't know yet, Brian, because we're hoping, right, that we can rely a little bit on the profiling as one of the elements. But we will know as soon as we get the platform in market, December 15, see if our assumptions are correct. Or, of course, there's going to be learnings. Yeah. Every time you assume something, it has been my experience launching products, you learn a lot through the process. You cannot have very strong, just this is the way it's going to be. You have to have flexibility built into your model and product to adapt to whatever comes your way. So I think
we'll learn a little bit more in a few months. Very honest answer. Thank you for that. So, I mean, that's what we do as entrepreneurs too, right? We learn from, you know, our mistakes and what works and what doesn't work, and we adjust over time. So do you see yourself as a virtual MVPD, an actual replacement for, you know, a whole cable, or who do you compete with, I guess is a better question to ask? Or are you sort of consider yourself more a niche streaming service focused on the Latin market?
Yeah, we're a streaming service, a niche. I don't like the word niche because a niche sometimes is a small group of people.
Community of interest, let's call it.
Right, a community of interest, absolutely. Okay. We are a streaming service for Latinos. which in many regions where the general market, right, were more Latinos than other segment groups, like in California and in specific cities in California, for example. So yeah, my main competitor today is Univision. Univision launched a streaming service called ViX. Their model is a little bit different than ours. They have an AVOD portion, but they also have an SVOD. And then also anyone that takes time off at the end of a competition who takes time of attracting a user. So we know our demographics are watching Netflix and Disney, right? And they're coming to us to get that more cultural relevant content for a big group of them. For other groups, we tend to be their only streaming service. So yeah, we're competing even radio. Whoever is taking time of the user from being in front with you, that's your competition.
Yeah, and that's a good way to look at it. You know, the average household is two, three, four streaming apps, maybe just one, right? So you got to be able to appeal to the sort of add-on service or the core service. So it seems like you're sort of thinking that through a little bit. Let's talk, let's go up a level. I'd love to get your insights about what's happening in the industry at large right now. We've seen some retraction in subscriber growth. We've seen increased churn, you know, people binging from one side to the other. Jumping services. How do you see the things, you know, what does your crystal ball look like for next year? Are you concerned at all? Or because of your focus and your audience, do you just see growth on the horizon?
Yeah, it's true. I think a lot of people are realizing that the growth of streaming, there is a cap to that. And there's subscription fatigue as well. And I think the economy is not going to help much subscription products. People are going to have to become more selective. And so it's going to be a tough year, I think, for subscription platforms. In the other hand, I think it's a year for AVOD. So a lot of people used to think about AVOD, oh, the ad-supported platform. Who's going to want that, right? Because users have been learning for so long to binge watch and not having interruptions. So how can an AVOD model be attractive? But now that we see Netflix, they used to say, I would never go into an AVOD model,
right?
It
wasn't that long ago. That's right.
Not long ago. And I think that's when people ask me something, I'm like, I don't want to say never, because I have learned from other people that say never, and then they find themselves in a situation. So yeah. I do think it's going to be the years of AVOD. We're going to see incredible growth for AVOD. I'm particularly excited having names like Netflix and Disney is selling advertising, because it also pushes more advertisers to consider AVOD as a main source of scale and reach for audiences. And it's going to help the migration quicker than from TV to streaming. So I think it's going to help the overall industry, having those big players joining the ad side. I think there's some things when we talk about the ad space in particular that I have noticed, and I think it's important to highlight, that a lot of people are waking up and realizing that is, for so long we were thinking, okay, streaming very close to digital video, right? Or digital properties, and we continue to see that comparison. However, something buyers are realizing, the scarcity of inventory when it comes to OTT. OTT ends up being a little bit more closer to what television is, to what digital video is when it comes to purchase. Why? We're used to, when we talk about digital, going programmatic and just purchase inventory however we want, because there's a billion websites out there with video. There's a billion videos of cats playing the piano or short form video. So the inventory is immense, right? So what that calls is for lower CPMs. But when you move to the OTT, you're talking more premium content, long form, less interruptions of ads. So it's not going to be a scale play like we're used to in digital video. So when we're evaluating these platforms, we need to kind of show buyers the reality that they need to start looking them more closely to television. And they're going to call for higher CPMs, as we're seeing what Netflix and those platforms are coming, because it's more of a premium environment. So I think they're still learning on that. Us particular, we have a lot of demand, which is a good place to be, to the point that we can be selective and say, we have the programmatic pipelines, we can monetize programmatic, but because we're sold out directly, we have the luxury to say, you know what, we're not going to take dollars from programmatic, and we're going to command higher CPMs because the demand is high. So It's a great time to be an AVOD.
Yeah, it's very exciting. You know, we're seeing some, you know, pullback in terms of subscriber growth, viewer growth, and churn and so on, but we're not seeing really, at least not yet, a decrease in the investments in content. You know, Netflix is 20 billion, Disney's 30 billion. I mean, we're talking billion. What do you think about original content? How important is that to the Canela strategy and vision for the future? What's the right mix between licensing content? You know, you're obviously that's the low hanging fruit. It sounds like you're investing more in original content. You have your studios churning up new titles. How do you manage that, you know, decision making when it comes to allocating your financial resources as a company?
Great. Yeah, I mean, we're an ABOT, so by model, we're going to continue to rely for in library content and be able to provide high variety of programming. That's always going to be the core of our ABOT model. However, because of the specific segment that we're going after, to be able to serve them correctly, we cannot ignore going into original programming. I think original programming has to be seen as a marketing tool for our platform. That's how we see it. It's like an expense that is close to marketing. Yes, it's a high expense, but if it helps you attract more audiences, reduce churn, it's a great vehicle. So we are very focused in our strategy of content is celebrities that are A+. So we don't work, all our programming tends to be more non-scripted and it's working whoever is the biggest celebrity at that moment, because as we see it as a marketing tool, if we work with the biggest celebrities, they have very strong fan bases. So they're very strong in social. And if they can utilize their voice and their those specific fans to come and see them in our platform, we want a new user. And then when they come to the platform, what we've seen is they stay. And then we can show them different programming. So yes, you hook them with the original and they will stay to watch the rest. So,
okay. So you touched on my next, thank you for that. You touched on my next question, which is subscriber acquisition. You know, because your reach is all over, your target demographics are all over, how do you manage that part? You know, how do you draw on new subscribers? You mentioned social, you know, brand ambassadors, that kind of thing. You're obviously experiencing a lot of success. What is your strategy around subscriber acquisition or viewer acquisition?
It's expensive. I think that's the thing with ABOT. A lot of people, the numbers, yes, you can grow a strong service, but you have to invest so much money in advertising. There's no way like just to get that service fast growing organically. You need to put a lot of money in paid media. Of course, you're going to utilize things as well as fans and influencers, but the majority of that growth comes from paid media. So we do invest a lot in growing the service. We're in a little bit of everything from out of home to in platform targeting to social to display is critical. Without that investment, it's very difficult to grow the platform. So yes.
So yeah, I mean, and I've heard that from other services. There's no magic bullet. You've got it. You have a portfolio approach to attracting new viewers. And you got to pay the price, right? It's not cheap. It's not easy. But it's a, you know, it's a long-term investment because you're looking at that long-term value. We're almost out of time, but one of the things I like to do in these podcasts is sort of personalize them a little bit and learn more about some of the leaders in the industry. Can you tell our listeners and viewers something about yourself, hobby, something interesting that they may not know?
Can founders have hobbies? Because I don't think
there's no time for that. How about pickleball? Everybody's playing pickleball now. I don't know.
So no hobbies. I love a lot of it. I just don't have my hobbies. Work is not a great answer. However, what I do, many people don't, some people know or don't, I have 4 kids. So I'm a mom of 4 and I do believe that you can have it all. Like maybe it's not all at how you wish it to be, but you can be a mom of 4 and have your beautiful family and work very hard. But you just have to make the time that you have worthwhile. So I might have 2 hours a night with my kids and that's it because I work all day, but I make those 2 hours count. And yeah, my kids are the best thing I have. I have very young children, 3 boys. And after 3 boys, we're like, I want a girl so badly. And so I'm like, I have to go for the 4. It has to be a girl. And she was a big girl. So.
Oh, no, she's the princess for sure. So I have 5 kids, 3 boys and 2 girls. So I totally can relate, you know, that balance. But you know what? People are always shocked when I say that. But you know what? There's efficiencies in having kids because they play together. Right. And, you know, it just, if you have to create a zone defense, they say, from a parenting perspective. But yeah,
I agree. I do assembly line in the mornings when I have to do their how you say their sandwiches for school. Yeah. It's the same thing. You just have to do it one more and or two more. And so you find ways to create those efficiencies.
Well, congratulations for you. You know, not only as a leader in the industry, but as a person managing your lifestyle balance. We'll continue to track Canela Media and TV and everything that you're doing there. Thank you for joining us today. This was fantastic.
Thank you, Brian, for having me.
All right, Isabel, we're signing off. Thanks all to our viewers for tuning in to the OTT Executive Podcast. Signing off. Have a great day, everyone.